Can't wait.
Can't wait. Can't wait.
It was a good game. Both teams play hard.
About their defense. They can't stop a nosebleed.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
I got man hits like I was Rod Carew.
Yeah. Can't wait.
What happened offensively in that period?
Turnovers.
What about on the defensive end? They had their most productive quarter. What'd you see there?
Turnovers. Not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven.
Not the game that I go out there and die for.
This is grown man B.I.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Relax and take notes.
Hello and welcome to Can't Wait, Tucson's home of all the NBA free agent hubbub. We're going to talk about other sports at some point, but this is our time. The NBA offseason is quickly becoming the most interesting thing to talk about sports-wise. We call it Woj season, where Yahoo reporter Adrian Wojnarowski has Twitter on fire for about two straight days, just breaking all the news. We want to know who's going where and why and for how much. Talking about it today over two segments, it's me, Nick Prevenis. Join me as always, we have Matt Milner.
Hey, Nick.
We also have Rusty Boulay-Stevenson.
Hi there.
And segment one, we're going to deal with just LaMarcus Aldridge. Because through LaMarcus Aldridge, we get to put together an entire picture of the way that free agency kind of went. LaMarcus Aldridge was the best player on the market. We don't actually believe Marc Gasol is on the market, in quotes. He's going back to Memphis. Mm-hmm. But in terms of guys that were actually in play, LaMarcus Aldridge was the biggest domino. He's the one that kind of dictated the way the rest of free agency went. And the first thing I want to ask, Matt Milner, is LaMarcus Aldridge a good enough player to warrant this kind of fuss? He's a multiple All-Star. He's very good. He was the linchpin of some very good Portland teams. But he's not one of the five best players in the league. He's not like a transformational LeBron, Durant, Chris Paul kind of superstar. How good is he, and is he worth this?
Well, if the question is he worth this in terms of his contract, then yes. I think in this market,
100%.
He is. But in terms of the hubbub and the attention, you know, I think a lot of that is just an outgrowth of the fact that there were a number of teams that were in interesting situations, either because they were contenders already or because they're, you know, one of the premier media markets where they always get more attention anyway. You know, the teams that were in the race, so to speak, going for him were all teams that had some kind of interesting hook to them.
Right.
And I think that people were really drawn in by the intrigue of, will the Spurs finally bring in a star-level free agent, you know, after basically two decades of success through a very different model of team building. This is the first time that they've really dipped their toes into this pond. So it's going to be very interesting to see how all that plays out. But I think that you're really LaMarcus Aldridge, even though he's a very, very nice player and, again, worth the money in this market, I don't think that you're a contender, a true contender, if he's your best player. I think ideally he is your second or third best player, which is what he will be on the Spurs.
And he will be the hub for kind of what they do over the next 5 years, him and Kawhi Leonard together. And so what I want to ask you, Rusty, do you think he made the right call choosing the Spurs for the 4-year, $80 million deal, staying close to home, doing all the things that he said, but going to be the heir apparent to Tim Duncan there in San Antonio?
To me, it's a no-brainer. He goes from Portland, first of all, to San Antonio, an hour away from where he went to college. That in and of itself is pretty huge. Everybody talks about taxes as well in Texas compared to California. That's an issue, and I recognize it. But at the same time, too, I think we should all pay our fair share of taxes and not worry about that so much.
Yeah.
But
easy to say when you're not making $20 million a year.
That's a fair point.
That tax bracket is the economics beyond all that. Not just for him, but the way that pie gets divvied up. He doesn't clear $20 million gross. You know, that's a weird.
It does get divvied up. You're right. You're right. But I think,
do you think it's a good basketball situation?
And that's where I go next, is exactly. Yeah, I think San Antonio's perfect. Just like Matt said, he needs to be not the best player. He's really great. He's really great. And in today's NBA, he's perfect. He's a great player. He's your stretch guy who can go out to the perimeter and shoot if you need to. He still works well inside. He averaged over 10 rebounds last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really great. That's a really great player to put alongside all this cast of San Antonio players. And then when you look at the other teams, too, would I want to go right now? He would be the best player on the Lakers right now. Maybe he's not better than Carmelo. I take him over Carmelo.
Oh, he's
personally.
Better than Carmelo Anthony. He is.
And so he's the best player on the Knicks. And the Suns, he's part of a cast that's really intriguing, maybe.
And they made a really interesting pitch. You know, it was one of those things where everybody assumed if he's leaving Portland, it's because he's going to San Antonio. The fact that the Phoenix Suns put themselves...
were in the conversation.
Yeah, not just... but, like, neck and neck. Like, it took a second visit from Greg Popovich to kind of sway him to reconsider the Spurs as the front runner. They won. But the Suns... you know, you don't typically think of the Phoenix Suns as being that free agent destination, but they've made it pretty far in a lot of these conversations now.
They have. Last year with LeBron, even. LeBron,
they got
a
meeting.
That was in there. They were in play for LeBron. And, you know, there are a host of reasons as to why that is the case. Phoenix is an attractive city to live in. Scottsdale's really great. If you're a young multimillionaire, a young man, that's a great place to be around. It really is. And then they've got a really interesting team there in Phoenix, you know. You put a big man who can shoot with them, an all-star, somebody who's been an all-star four times, then you've got a really intriguing team. But, hey, gosh, if you're a player, and again, and you're looking at what you love to do and you want to be the best or on the best, around the best, San Antonio is just it right now.
Yeah, it took a while, but the system finally landed a big guy. This is not how they do things in San Antonio. They draft guys, they find value, they groom them for their system, and they use free agency to bring in complementary pieces. I think prior to Aldridge, who would have been the biggest free agent? Michael Finley? Maybe Boris Diaw? I mean, these are the kind of guys they sign in the offseason. They don't go out, they don't even seek those top dollar guys. They waited to make their pitch for the perfect guy to come on the market at the perfect time. And LaMarcus Aldridge is one of those kind of players that maybe traditionally, you look at his game, and it's a lot of mid-range jumpers, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of the knock on him is, yeah, he feasts on the spots on the floor that are considered inefficient. But if you hit that shot as often as Aldridge does, that becomes efficient.
Right.
If that's the shot that defenses are willing to give up to get rid of threes and layups, and you have LaMarcus Aldridge hitting 45, 50% of those 18-footers, I don't know how you're defended. And then there's this other situation. You look at Aldridge's complete game, and it's interesting because he's a really good passer. You watch the way that the Blazers set up around him as the hub of their offense. They shot a lot of threes. I mean, Portland probably shot as many threes as any team alongside the Warriors, and that's in large part because the way that Aldridge likes to operate, he catches the ball probably about 18 feet from the hoop on the left elbow. That's where he likes to catch it on the pick and pop. Mm-hmm. You have to close out on him because he is the best shooter. Like, he's a Dirk Nowitzki-level shooter from that spot on the floor.
That's right.
He can take one hard dribble left and throw a cross-court pass to the corner, and that's where Wesley Matthews ends up making $50 million off of torn Achilles, because Wesley Matthews can hit that shot 40, 50% of the time. And you just think about his passing ability and the way the Spurs run their offense and the way they like to spot the floor with shooters. It's devastating. You cannot guard this team now. What I want to know is, he turned down a meeting with the Knicks because the Knicks insisted he play center. He is adamant that he is a power forward. Tim Duncan, for years, has been adamant that he's a power forward. He's going to make it work. He's going to come back for way less money than Tim Duncan should be coming back for, because they see an opportunity to win a title next year. How is this working? They traded away Tiago Splitter to make this room. Do you think that it's going to be an issue who plays where and when, or do you think that these guys are going to be pros because they're the Spurs?
Well, I think that one thing that I think of when trying to wrangle through this question of who's going to play center is there was the great quote from Popovich from a few years ago when somebody asked him, I think before it was in a playoff series, I don't remember which one, asked him, who's going to start at center tonight? And he said, Tim Duncan, just like every night for the last 15 years.
Yes, 100%. He is their center.
So, you know, it's at a certain point, it doesn't really matter who you call the center and who you call the power forward.
It never does, but it weirdly matters to Aldridge.
Yeah, and whatever. And I think that for Duncan, despite the fact that he's not, you know, known as an ego guy, I think part of it for him was that as long as he was defined as a power forward, he could go down as the greatest power forward ever.
That's right.
If you call yourself a center, all of a sudden you're
it's
in the Kareem conversation
and
for the
Russell.
Yeah, you're contending with, are you one of the top five centers ever, as opposed to the undisputed greatest power forward ever. I think that functionally on defense, Tim Duncan will operate as their quote-unquote center.
Yeah, park himself near the rim, protect the rim, which he did at an exceptional level last year.
Absolutely. And Aldridge, though I think that in the Spurs system and working with those guys and their culture, I think he will become a better defender, a better, you know, system defender.
I think he's a pretty solid defender. And he had Robin Lopez he got to play alongside,
right,
who's a very active big man defender.
Yeah.
Aldridge does a nice job stringing out pick and rolls. He's very long. He's 6'11 with arms that just keep going.
Yeah.
And he can recover and block shots. He's not an incredible athlete, but he's a good athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing he likes to do is run the floor. So he transitions nicely into that next generation with Kawhi Leonard and whatever the Spurs end up becoming in this next iteration.
Right.
It's a home run. Like I don't see a downside. I just think they see an opportunity to bring on LaMarcus Aldridge, and that extends the Spurs' run for at least the next 5-6 years.
There's only one scenario in which I see it as being potentially a problem, and even then, it's not a problem because on that contract, unless you know he loses a leg in a tractor accident or something, like he will be a tradable, valuable asset that they've collected. If things don't go well in the next year, you can move that deal, especially once the cap goes up, him on $20 million a year. I mean, that's like a player $15 or $14 million a year now. So it's a
really nice deal for all involved.
Yeah. But I will say that we saw, you know, at the end of that Blazers time and in that last series, you know, you saw some body language and there were already the murmurings, you know, midway through the season that Aldridge was looking to move on. And you heard things about him not getting along with Damian Lillard.
True.
And I am not suggesting that in any way is he a bad locker room guy or that he's going to destroy their chemistry or anything like that. But, you know, for the first time, the Spurs are going to put a lot of stock in a guy who's not a product of their culture and their system.
It's true.
And we're going to learn a lot about both the strength of that culture and system in terms of being able to integrate outside presences, but also we'll learn a lot about LaMarcus Aldridge if he can kind of get with the program and accept that, you know what, my scoring average may go down and my rebounds may go down if I'm fighting with Duncan for some of that and Kawhi and, you know, other guys who can hound the boards. And he's going to have to deal with the first game where, because of a matchup situation, Pop decides, I'm going to go with Duncan and Diaw for the fourth quarter, and LaMarcus, you're going to be on the bench. We're going to see how he reacts to that. And that's going to be, I think, what determines whether this is ultimately a success on the court.
Oops. Yeah, he gets 20 shots a night. His whole career, he gets his 20. It doesn't matter where they come in the game. It just seems like he always gets the same 20 shots every night. The Spurs don't really operate like that around a guy.
Not at all. And so I think that's really insightful, Matt. I think it's a really insightful point, is we will see, especially what happens when you bring somebody in who's already a mature player, who's 30 years old, and how he's going to fit. I still think it's a home run. I still think that it's going to work out. But that's a really intriguing notion, is how does LaMarcus Aldridge fit into this new system? And does he accept it the way everybody else who's been drafted into it does?
In great championship cultures in the past, there's a precedent for being able to, you know, bring in prominent outside contributors from a very different culture. I mean, even you go back to the Bulls and, you know, having to integrate Rodman or Tony Kukoc or guys who, you know, were very different culturally.
They had patterns established.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you know, and the Pat Riley teams in Miami have also had a track record of sort of finding cast-offs and lost souls, so to speak, and finding ways to turn their careers around, like Birdman being a good example of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting that it won't happen or that it'll be a challenge, but I think that'll be the only obstacle.
Well, yeah, what's the first game where he only gets 12 shots? Mm-hmm. What's the first game where he only plays 26 minutes because of matchups or because one unit's working? And you don't question Popovich on this.
No.
But LaMarcus Aldridge has been in the league a long enough time. He's played the Spurs enough times. And
it was that
conversation with Greg Popovich that second time when Popovich flew out to L.A. to really seal the deal on Aldridge coming to the Spurs. And it just feels like he's at that point in his career where he's been the way that Ray Allen and Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett all got to that same point when they came to Boston, where it's like, you know what, I've had my 20, 25 shots a night, but mm-hmm. I'm going to go become part of something greater.
Right.
Right. And Aldridge seems like he's got that mental makeup for something like that. Mm-hmm. He's ready for something yeah. like that. And this feels like maybe 25-year-old LaMarcus Aldridge doesn't buy in immediately, but 29, 30-year-old LaMarcus Aldridge cannot wait to buy into what they're doing. What you brought up earlier about the simmering tensions perhaps with Damian Lillard all kind of went back to a thing about maybe Aldridge didn't feel appreciated as the linchpin of that Portland Trailblazer franchise. He didn't have that Adidas commercial that Lillard got. He didn't get that State Farm commercial Lillard got. You know, Lillard is he's very marketable.
Yeah.
And Aldridge, you know, Aldridge showed up on Portlandia a couple times, so he's got a sense of humor. He wants to be kind of out there. So I think what happened this last week or so with him taking literally all the meetings, it seemed like. He right. dominated the internet news cycle for a good 3 days. It felt like he just wanted to be wanted and have that be wooed, be recruited, be pitched. And I wanted to talk about a little bit about this pitch cycle, because we brought up the Suns. They did a remarkable job pitching him. A couple of teams did not do so good of a job. And LaMarcus Aldridge's free agency kind of exposed the Knicks and Lakers as not being the kinds of destinations they're used to being. Before the players became marketable in and of themselves, players would flock to New York or L.A. to have those off-the-court financial opportunities. Now that they're garbage, teams, you know, the players see what they, you know, they know what's going on there. So LaMarcus Aldridge has this meeting with the Lakers. They spend that first hour talking about nothing to do with basketball. They have Adam Levine tweeting L.A. to L.A. They have this whole, like, weird... I mean, who's even in that meeting? It was strange, right? And so then Kobe comes in and does that typical Kobe jerk move that he's now famous for, where it's like, I see you as my Pau Gasol, mm-hmm. you know, on a wheelchair after an Achilles injury that just sidelined his shooting guard, Wes Matthews. He knows what he's dealing with.
Yeah.
And so it was embarrassing. Let's make no bones about it. LaMarcus Aldridge's visit to L.A. was an embarrassment for the Lakers. And given that, they now had to trade for Roy Hibbert into their salary caps. They're basically taking on scraps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is LaMarcus Aldridge's meetings with the Lakers show you about what it takes to build a franchise now?
Well, I think you've really nailed it, Nick. I think it really is about basketball for most of these guys now, yeah. right? And I think the internet's a bit of a leveling of the playing field as far as that goes, because you can be Damian Lillard in Portland and get these big contracts outside of basketball, right? You don't have to be in the biggest markets. You don't have to be in Chicago. You don't have to be in LA or New York. And so the internet has kind of leveled that a little bit. And the fact that there's so much information available, no matter where you play, be it Oklahoma City or Portland or Milwaukee, those are still destinations where if you're putting a team together, and that's where winning now has become so important to these guys. They'll take less money because they know they're going to go to win. And it was embarrassing for New York or for LA. I don't think it was as embarrassing for New York. And I think that whole thing about him not being the center was a touch of a smokescreen.
Yeah.
Because I think it's easier to say that than to say, I don't want to play with Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah. I don't even want to take this meeting with Phil Jackson.
Yeah. I don't even want to meet with Phil Jackson. Exactly.
This is a disaster.
I'm a bad fit. I know it. I've seen their team. I'm a bad fit on that team. Mm-hmm. You know? And so to me, that's a smokescreen.
That's a good call.
Yeah, that is a good call, Rusty. And I think that both teams actually did a pretty decent job of recovering once it became clear that the top guys were not going their way. You know, Phil Jackson made a number of more modest moves that are actually geared towards building a cohesive team.
Moves that wouldn't be mocked if it wasn't the Knicks.
Right.
Yeah, I actually like it. Yeah. I like what they've done.
I thought the Kyle O'Quinn trade and contract, I think that there's the potential for that to be a tremendous contract. I mean, there's, in terms of his per minute production, there are a lot of signs that he's someone who's deserving of a bigger role. And if he can give you 25, a solid, fringe starter level minutes at $4 million a year, that's a phenomenal contract.
Mm-hmm. There's some Hassan Whiteside potential with O'Quinn. Those are the kind of gambles you take when you have cap room and you're not going to go to the finals.
And the Robin Lopez deal, I thought, was a very fair deal for the market, and I think he fills a need for them and will cover up a lot of their defensive issues elsewhere. Aflalo, I think, is a little bit overrated still, but
he's on the decline.
Yeah. $8 million a year for 2 years, I mean, that's not again, under the market for who's out there, that's not a bad deal. And it's, when he's playing at his best, he's a reasonable fit for what they need.
These are actual NBA players.
Yeah.
The absolutely. Knicks didn't have those last year.
That's
exactly.
Right. That's right.
And I think that's the lesson. And it goes back to what Rusty was saying, that teams, that, you know, the players want to go to teams that are going to win and that have a chance, and they don't want to be the first piece, because Carmelo is actually, in a lot of ways, a good example.
A cautionary tale now.
A cautionary tale, yeah. Where, with the Knicks, so they strike out in the first LeBron free agency and they get Amari, and then they actually start off with a pretty nice run that season. They've got a lot of nice quality NBA players. And what do? They trade them all off to get back Carmelo, and they could have just signed him 3 months later.
Yep.
And
the Nuggets had no leverage in that whatsoever.
None. Yeah.
So the Nuggets walk away with basically every quality NBA player on the Knicks roster not named Amari. And the Knicks operate under the assumption, well, now we've got our two superstars in place, it'll be a piece of cake to just acquire the rest of the pieces. Everyone's going to come flock to play with these guys. Well, the wheels fall off for Amari, predictably.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Melo does kind of his Melo thing. And, they had they had a nice little run for a season and a half.
There was that accidental season where they won like 57 games, mm-hmm. but they played Carmelo at small ball power forward out of necessity,
right.
And then shot a ton of threes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit of fool's gold. But anyway, the bottom line is the Knicks have put themselves in a position now where next year, theoretically, if Porzingis develops in a way where you can already see after year one that this is a guy who really is the real deal and has potential, and if Carmelo plays the best version of himself, then next year maybe that is a more appealing option when they've got space again. But, and then for the Lakers, Hibbert, for 1 year, I mean, the $15 million, at a certain point, it doesn't really matter because you're not going to use that money.
They have no one under contract.
Yeah, you got to spend it somewhere. And he also, similarly, like the Robin Lopez things, he will cover for a lot of their deficiencies. And I think Hibbert has become almost underrated again.
No question. There's no question. Because even though he has his struggles offensively, he's still one of the best defensive players in the league.
Yeah, and that's really what they need. And playing next to Julius Randle, I think that'll be helpful. And, I think that it'll help D'Angelo Russell's development to know that they've got somebody who's kind of a linchpin in the back line there. So in any event, I thought they pivoted well, but they learned, and hopefully it'll be a lesson going forward, that you have to build the team first before you try to come in and pitch someone who's in the middle of their prime already. It's not appealing for LaMarcus Aldridge to have to be around for a 5 year Lakers or Knicks rebuilding project.
Yeah, and the thing about this market situation, the market doesn't land you the player when you're bad, but it still gets you the meeting. If that Lakers roster was in Milwaukee, you're kidding. No, just flat out no.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they're the Lakers in Los Angeles, where professional athletes like to live, they still got the meeting. And they embarrassed themselves because their basketball situation is a nightmare. But that basketball situation is not worth a LaMarcus Aldridge meeting. It was not worth his time.
Yeah.
He gave them two sit-downs.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So all they have to do is be decent.
Mm-hmm.
And they get out from under this Kobe shadow, which, you know, as Henry Abbott reported, has hindered them in free agency the last handful of years because mm-hmm. people don't want to play for this condescending jerk who's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we get our shots in now because we're not going to continue to make fun of these teams because they still get the meetings.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant is going to be taking meetings soon.
Mm-hmm.
Washington is obviously trying to clear whatever they need to clear to make sure they can have that sweet homecoming story. He's going to give meetings to both LA teams.
Yeah.
And all the guys of that level, Russell Westbrook, you know, whoever comes up, they're going to give them the time of day. And they shouldn't, but they will.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you said, they just have to continue to build NBA competent rosters. I think the Lakers are in an advantageous position because I think Russell is a foundational piece.
Yeah.
If Porzingis absolutely. Can be that foundational piece, and what helps with the way that Phil Jackson has put the roster together is he doesn't have to come in and play right away now.
Mm-hmm.
He can come along at a reasonable pace. He does not have to overextend.
And kudos for the Knicks for figuring that out,
you know,
because I didn't think they were going to. When we talked before the draft, I had given up on the Knicks, and I really thought that they weren't going to do it the right way. And instead, somehow, somebody's talked sense into Phil Jackson and Dolan, and they've done the right things. When I never see the Knicks do the right things. I didn't think I'd be saying that at this point in July, but they have.
They're nice moves. They're not... I don't see them going to the playoffs next year.
No.
But they still lose that first round pick. You know, it's part of it was a pick swap from the aforementioned Carmelo Anthony deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that thing is still coming back to bite them.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way that you don't just continue to dig a hole, you have to pivot and adjust and see what the landscape will afford you. In the next segment, we're going to talk about a team that has learned none of these lessons with the Sacramento Kings and get into part two of NBA free agency here on Can't Wait.